Hello members, good morning. Welcome at this meeting, actually a special meeting of the Select Committee for Finance, where we will be dealing with and getting a briefing on the Financial Sector Regulation Bill. And the reason is to give us background referring to our study tour to Mexico that starts on Monday in Mexico City. Now, why Mexico? Why a study tour? The Financial Sector Regulation Bill, as also referred to in the Twin Peaks, seeks to completely overhaul the financial system in South Africa. In the last 25 years, there have been a period of enormous transformation in the financial services sector. The sector has seen a market shift from domestic firms engaged in distinct banking securities, and insurance business to more integrated financial services conglomerates, offering a broad range of financial products across the globe. These fundamental changes in the nature of how financial institutions operate have exposed the shortcomings of the current financial system, and South Africa is no exception to the global trends. Several countries went through a review of their legislation. Other countries changed their policies and legislation because of specific crises like the emerging markets crisis in the late 1990s and the global crisis in 2008. The National Treasury has proposed a Twin Peaks approach based on the experience of countries as diverse as Mexico, the United Kingdom, the United States, the Netherlands, and Australia. This approach will create two separate financial sector regulators, a market conduct authority and a prudential authority. The market conduct authority will focus on how financial services firms sell, market, and distribute products, and the prudential regulator will focus on financial strength in the individual financial services firms. And so it's going on. I'm not going into the detail. Treasury is yet to do it. Why Mexico? Mexico is a developing country, more in line with what's happening also in South Africa. The Standing Committee for Finance went to the United Kingdom, a developed country, and they did their study tour, and they're busy compiling their report. We are going to do the same in Mexico, come back. What have we learned there? What have the Mexicans done? Compile our report and the Mexican report, the United Kingdom report becomes one when we deal with this legislation finally in November, beginning of December. That's the idea. So that's the reason for this trip. It's connected to the work we are doing. It's not a happy gallant in Mexico. So we're going to work. And the program is being crafted. I'm going to tell you it's a very, very high profile program. On Monday, we will have the final program tomorrow afternoon. But the Monday morning, we will be hosted by the Mexican Chamber of Deputies, they call it the lower house, and there will be presentations on the Mexican financial sector reforms, where we will also make an input. We are supported by our researcher fully, as well as a lady from the National Treasury, Mrs. Campbell, that worked at the Mexican Bank, is now a senior economist at the National Treasury. And she will assist us also with presentations. On Tuesday, there will be a workshop with the Bank of Mexico the whole day. On Wednesday, the National Banking and Securities Commission will welcome us, and they will entertain us on their program. On Thursday is the State of the National Address by the Mexican President. We will then try to meet with stakeholders outside the political fraternity. In the private sector, then Friday morning there will be a short program because we depart the early evening. So that is just a broad framework, but the detail will be ready tomorrow when the embassy emails that to us. With that introduction, there's no apologies. Roy, please take us through. Welcome, Roy. Welcome to all your endeavors.
Thank you very much.
Always available.
Thank you very much.
Please bring it out,
I'm joined by my partner, Charles Peter, and I think, you know, Gert is...
Thank you, Charles, standing in for Zolani. Thank you, Charles. Zolani is in Pretoria with all our passports, organizing the Mexican visas. He's returning this afternoon.
Okay, so I think you summarized this really good. I'm going to quickly just show you some pictures to show how what the problem is. So just to tell you how we got to where we are today, in 2011, the Minister of Finance put out a policy paper called the State of Financial Sector to Serve South Africa Better. They made a number of proposals on retirement, on financial inclusion, a range of different things, most of which we have implemented over the last few years. The most significant proposal was that we proposed to implement this new system called the Twinpeaks system. And then in February 2013, we issued a roadmap document to explain how we were going to do it, and we took comments on that. And then in December 2013, we published the first draft of the bill that we speak about, and we consult on it. And in December 2014, a year later, after a lot of stakeholder comments, we put forward a second draft. And then we also consulted them, and then in November we tabled the bill in Parliament, and the bill has now been in Parliament since November last year. The Standing Committee took a set of public comments earlier this year, and then there was election period, and now the Standing Committee is processing the bill. So it is hopefully on the way to this committee in due course. But that's where we are, and if Parliament approves the bill, then we hope to establish two new authorities in 2017. But we haven't given you all the documentation because there's an enormous amount of documentation that you can find on our website at treasury.conference.
Just one last week we had also a meeting where you addressed the youth.
Yes.
You gave this out. There's lots of detail.
Yes.
So that's right. Supporting for someone. Yes. We are supporting each other, so please thank you.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so why do we care about regulating the financial sector? Well, our minister has a very nice line where he says that the financial service sector should be the servant of the economy and not its master. And it's a very good way of summarizing how we think about the financial services sector. So we think that we need a financial services sector that actually works towards the objectives of balanced and sustainable economic growth, and a sector that also works in the interests of financial customers. So I'm sure everybody in this room has got stories about how the financial services sector has stolen their money or whatever. I myself have put in two complaints to the relevant office already in my, and I'm sure everybody has a story. And we know that the financial services sector could definitely be doing better. And what we want to achieve is that all households and companies can transact, so they can buy and sell stuff using the financial services sector, that they can borrow, that they can save, and that they can manage their day-to-day risks efficiently and effectively. One of the most interesting things about South Africa is we have very high levels of bank accounts. I think about 89% of South Africans have bank accounts. We have incredibly high levels of credit, so I think about 80-85% of people have access to some kind of credit. But as soon as you ask the question, how many people in the country have insurance products, it falls off quite quickly. So only about 60% of people have insurance products. Very few people have savings products. So we're kind of doing well in the one thing and very badly in another thing. And the next bill that will follow this bill is the insurance bill. We're trying to introduce a system of what we call micro-insurance. And the idea is actually to help people insure. So we all know how expensive insurance is generally, and it's unaffordable for many people. And there are a few reasons for that. But one of the things we hope this process will achieve is that we can more people saving, more people insuring for their risks. And then from a perspective of a regulator and supervisor, regulators need to identify and manage the risks. So we need to give the regulators the right kinds of power. And we'll talk a little bit about the main risk categories that we have a whole few slides on flexibility and control.
Interesting, you've got the Union Jack.
Yes, so that is actually a cartoon from the crisis in the UK. And these are bankers. And these are ordinary people. And it was really interesting to be in London, actually, with this standing committee. Just the head bankers in that England. But basically, the bankers get everything and the people get nothing. This is quite soon. I don't know if it will be different in this country. Let the banking association try and defend. Okay, so this is a very complicated diagram, that's kind of the point. Is that the current regulatory system is really complicated. We have quite a few regulators, this is just under the Minister of Finance. There's the FSB, Financial Services Board, then there is the Financial Intelligence Center, there's the Development Agency for Corporate Banks, and then there's the Land Bank. There are all these advisory committees, all of these over here. There's some things that fall under the Reserve Bank. And then there are quite a few things that fall under the Minister of Trade and Industry. And then there are actually some things that fall under the Minister of Justice. So what has happened is that there is, it's improved quite a lot since we shared these reports, but I'll tell you now about what all the peer reviews found.
Just one correction. When you speak about Parliament,
yes,
you two houses. So the Senate Committee for Finance, it must be the Standing Committee on Finance, and then so on the other side for me, everyone put it the Select Committee for Finance.
We'll put you over here. Yes. Yes. We will definitely. Sorry about that. Okay, so there were a lot of things that happened over a long period of time that have made us increasingly concerned about the financial services sector. So we've always been regarded in the world as having a really good financial services sector. And I guess that's a lot like being an Olympian. So when you want to, it's all good being good and well winning a gold medal one year, but you need to keep on winning it. So the idea is to keep on upgrading. So basically, getting upgrading the system over a period of time. So we quite regularly bring bills. I know we were here last year, I think 2 years ago, for the Financial Markets Act. We've been here quite regularly. Banks and bills. That was last year. We probably have one bill a year, and then we have an omnibus bill that was 2 years ago. So we are constantly upgrading the financial service sector, and now the time has come to upgrade the regulators also. So we had Finentra, that was quite a while ago. We had a Competition Commission inquiry. We had a big review by the Minister of Finance at the time. And then we had the global financial crisis, and then we have had some issues, obviously, with household over-indebtedness, and then we had the African bank curatorship. We were very lucky in this country that we only lost a very small bank. You know, other countries had huge bank failures, which were very expensive. We only had one small failure, but even a small failure had a blessing for us. So. And then we've had quite a few international assessments by the G20, so we are a member of this G20, and so as a result, there are quite a few requirements that we have to meet. And then the IMF comes and does an assessment called the Financial Sector Assessment Program, and they do that in 5 years. And it's a very useful process, is just to check how are you doing compared to other countries. And Mexico and quite a few other developing countries are in the G20, and we kind of keep track of what they were doing and make sure that we sort of keep up with what everybody else is doing. And the big findings in both processes, and that's not surprising, is that there's very little inter-agency coordination. And that's not surprising if you have a look at the complicated diagram. It's really hard for all the regulators to coordinate with one another. We've, as Trinity said, in place processes to try and improve it. But there is a coordination problem, and there needs to be some stuff for derivatives reform, which we're going to do in this process. But the other problem is, as you said in your introduction, that there are lots of really big companies. So a good example is First National Bank. I mean, they do insurance, or they used to do insurance, so they do sort of insurance. They have asset management, they do banking. So this company does lots and lots of different things. And it's in the old system, it has different regulators for all the different things it does. And that creates quite a few risks. So that's kind of the problem. I'll try to explain to you why we're doing this, which is that, you know, we're concerned about improving the system. I'm now going to ask Sheila to try and answer this question, what is Twin Peaks? So if you type in Twin Peaks into Google, it always brings up the soap opera in the US called Twin Peaks, and so hopefully it's going to the soap opera that we can hear, and hopefully there won't be a murder, but we'll explain what Twin Peaks is.
So, relating to peaks from a sort of a financial sector regulatory perspective, it's really about the distinction between the prudential oversight of institutions versus the market conduct aspect of it. So, when we're looking at prudential, we're worried about the financial safety and soundness of the institution, because if the institution isn't able to operate in a viable financial, it's not able to meet its obligations to its customers, and that can have quite negative effects for customers and clients. So that is about ensuring that it is managing its business in an efficient and prudent manner to ensure that it has financial resources to meet its obligations. So the regulator is really more worried about, although the outcome of that is to ensure that customers are protected, but ultimately it's about looking at the institution itself and its balance sheet and its resources and its risk management are appropriate to the risks that it takes and what it is able to meet those obligations. And from a conduct perspective, it's about looking at whether the business of the institution and activity that it takes is appropriate for is appropriate for the customer and that it meets the customer's needs. It's about also ensuring that the incentives are aligned, that, you know, they're not, the institutions, I think one of the problems that came out during the crisis under the they identified under securitization framework was that you had this whole originate to distribute. So I just originate a product, but I'm not worried about, you know, the end customer and how they will be impacted, whether the product itself is truly reflecting the risk, whether the customer understands the risk that they're taking. So it's all about, you know, selling and not taking into cognizance what that means at the end of the day for the end user. So that is the theoretical or rather academic distinction between product and potential. So setting up the two authorities really is about ensuring that the regulator, from a regulatory supervisory perspective, that they are able to exercise oversight over the market in respect of those mandates. So the Twin Peaks system that is proposed, as an example, we have prudential oversight, that will be the PA, that will be established within the South African Reserve Bank. So all the prudential regulation that is currently sort of fragmented across the regulatory sort of environment will shift to the PA. So all the insurance prudential regulation, all the fiscal prudential and all the securities prudential regulation will shift to the SARB, and we will have the responsibility of ensuring that financial institutions are sound. And for conduct oversight, so the FSU will be re-established as a financial sector conduct authority. So they will focus really on the conduct of business, of institutions and market integrity. So they manage across all the financial sector, looking at the provision of financial services and financial products. And we also propose to extend the financial stability mandate to the Reserve Bank. So they will be responsible for the oversight. It is a function that they are currently fulfilling, but it is codifying it in a way to the Twin Peaks Bill. So they will be responsible for maintaining oversight, monitoring where there are vulnerabilities in the sort of macroprudential system and being able to take corrective actions where there are gaps or weaknesses, and obviously also reporting on the status of stability of the South African financial stability. And I think that is the essence of the two, of the regulatory framework under John Peake. Okay, so that is just a summary of what is intended. We have the Prudential Authority that is working towards meeting those objectives, enhancing the safety and soundness of financial institutions or individual financial institutions. That is the Financial Conduct Authority. They will be looking at protecting financial customers, ensuring that customers are treated fairly, and that they are able to provide appropriate protection and appropriate services of products, and ensuring that there is an alignment of incentives in doing that. And one of the other issues that has been identified through the assessments and obviously they have to be sort of a neater way of dealing with customer complaints, and if there is a mechanism for customers who aren't necessarily sort of in a financial position to always be approaching the court, but there has to be a way for them that is less costly for their issues to be, if there are issues in terms of administrative action type of scenarios, that they are able to approach a tribunal without having the burden of going through a court or the expense of having to go to court. So we are establishing financial services tribunal to deal with matters that may arise within this sort of financial protection system. And of course, under that, we're having the financial stability, which is the power that I mentioned, the South African Reserve Bank. Obviously, from a macroprudential perspective, so we're looking at the entire financial sector, ensuring that everything is still, well, if there are risks, that they're able to contain it, or if there are crises, and so they're able to take action, corrective measures, as and when it's necessary. And obviously there's also a lot of collaboration, cooperation amongst the various authorities within the cities, as well as other organs of state. So we're also proposing to establish within the bill sort of codifying those mechanisms to ensure that there is appropriate consultation and information sharing among the various authorities just beyond what's within the finance ministry and other organs of state.
Okay. Should we take questions as we go, or should we move along the same thing? Okay. So as to this outline, we're taking a complicated diagram of different regulators and creating two new ones, the Prudential Authority, which is in the Reserve Bank, and the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, which is to convert the Financial Services Board. And then the idea is that all the different pieces of legislation in the financial sector will be linked into those two authorities. So we have 13 pieces of legislation. I haven't put all of them there, but they're basically the Banks Act and the Insurance Act, and then it's all the stuff that's potentially related to money market funds and financial market infrastructure, and that will be the responsibility of the Prudential Authority. And then there are other laws, which is insurance, so how insurers sell their products. So collective investment schemes are what most people know as unit trusts, so how they sell their products, how pension funds sell their products. This is Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act, so that's when you see a financial advisor, there's a whole system that they have to follow. And then Financial Markets Act, which establishes the JSC, that all will be looked after by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. So if you do have the enthusiasm to read through the bill and you make it all the way to the end, you see that there is a schedule at the back, Schedule 4, I tried to do it on the plane for the 40th time and I fell asleep. But no, the back of the bill is a schedule which amends all of these pieces of legislation to explain how they fit into the two authorities. And it's a very simple schedule, so it just says that, you know, the banking registrar will no longer exist and his functions will be taken over by the provincial authority. But it's to some extent kind of the most important schedule because it explains exactly how we're going to move from the one system to the new system. And then there are some additional powers and duties in addition to those in the current law, which will help us plug some gaps set out in the bill. And then, as Priscilla highlighted, there's this thing called the Financial Services Tribunal. So currently you have something called the Financial Services Board Appeal Board. So recently, for example, Johannesburg Stock Exchange took the FSB to the appeal board because a competitor had been granted a license. So they didn't like that, so they took them to the appeal board, and on technicality, the license was set aside. And that's kind of the stuff that a tribunal can do. It can appeal any decisions made by the regulators. So it can have decisions set aside. And it's quite important for when you're fining people. So you might get a penalty for doing something that you're allowed to do, and then you need a quick and easy way to be able to have an independent body check that that decision is correct. Obviously, that is a system, so for the purposes of the Promotion of Minister of Justice Act, that's sort of an internal remedy, and then you can always appeal the decision, even of the tribunal, into the High Court. So you've got the whole suite of administrative remedies available to you. So this is just a sort of an interim step to ensure that we can people get easy access to remedies. And then, you know, one of the problems that we have, which we highlighted earlier, is that we have very little, or we used to have, a lack of cooperation and coordination between regulators. And so we set up four bodies called the Council of Financial Regulators, the Financial Sector Interministerial Council, the Financial Stability Oversight Committee, and the Financial Contingency Forum that's designed to help regulators coordinate their action. And what they do. Okay, then, that is a ombudsman. You think they're helping people? One of the nice things about our system at the moment is that we have what we call ombuds. So if you have a problem with your bank, you can go to the banking ombuds and they can assist you in reaching a conclusion with your bank. Then if you have a problem with your insurer, you can obviously go to the insurance ombud. But there are two types of insurance. The insurance ombuds, there's a short-term insurance ombuds and a long-term insurance ombuds. Then there's an ombud for almost everything, I think. There's a pension fund ombud, and there is a... What else do we have? I've got a list of about 12, I think. So it's really interesting that the ombud all do different stuff. So the banking ombud has a particular system that he follows. The insurance, short-term insurance ombud has a particular system and a long-term insurance. And most people don't even know what the difference is between short-term insurance and long-term insurance. So if you have a problem with your insurer, you just want to find out what to do. And you know, then you first have to work, is this a long-term insurance question or a short-term insurance question? I'm sure most people know, but if you don't know, short-term insurance is like car insurance, and long-term insurance is like life insurance. So it's both insurance, but they're slightly different types of insurance. They also have very different systems. So there are two main types of ombuds. There are what we call voluntary ombuds, and there are statutory ombuds. Now, a voluntary ombud is an ombud that the industry has woken up one morning and decided it was an ombud. They're often funded by the industry, and they often do what the industry wants, surprisingly. then there are statutory ombuds, which are ombuds that we set up in law. So one of those is, for example, the pension funds adjudicator. It's also very confusingly named, not an ombuds, named an adjudicator, which is very confusing. And then they are funded by law. And then there's a whole sort of... All I'm trying to tell you, Chet, is that it's a very complicated system. And if you're an ordinary person out there and you just want to go and ask someone to help you with your problems with your financial institution, then you just want to go to one place. And so in the UK, they have centralized everything into a single ombuds, and a lot of other countries have done the same thing. So to give you another example, when you take out a credit, so when you go and get a credit agreement, for example, if you're buying a couch from, this is a publicly known example, from Lewis, they will give you credit, Lewis, and they will also give you insurance against the credit. So Lewis famously gave people, gave pensioners insurance against being retrenched. So that was misleading. Lewis is now very nice about all this. It's not uncommon. But if you have a problem with the insurance that Lewis provides, you just go to the short-term insurance ombud. If you have a problem with the credit Lewis provided, you just go to the credit ombud. And if you have a problem with the couch that Lewis sold you, you must go to the consumer. And often it's the same. Often you just have a problem with Lewis. So the idea is that we're trying to standardize and improve the system of ombuds and slowly but surely move to a much simpler single point of entry system for the ombuds system. So we will have the single point of entry. We will require all ombuds schemes to be registered with council, and we will strengthen the mechanisms for the council to ensure a consistent framework for how they go about resolving disputes across the sector. So that at least, you know, everybody knows that there's a single system. Right. Okay, so this is quite a big reform. We are eating the mountain in little bites, and the roadmap that we put out explains how we're doing this sort of one day at a time, so one year at a time. What we're doing in this year and in the beginning of next year is we're establishing the two new regulators. We're setting up the Financial Stability Oversight Committee. It's actually been meeting for quite a while now, and we're strengthening the enforcement. And so by the time we hope this committee recommends the bill, then we'll be ready to implement the two new regulators in 2017. And then at the same time, we will start the process of upgrading all the laws, all those 13 pieces of legislation that fit in. So the first one that's coming is the insurance bill, which is already tabled in Parliament. Then probably a new market conduct law, probably a new Financial Market Act, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that will take us the next 2 or 3 years. So for now, this bill just focuses on who regulates, so the two authorities, and then phase two will focus on how they regulate. So we're not trying to do everything in one shot. We originally thought about doing it in one shot, and then we realized that phase one is 200 pages of legislation, and it's taken us 3 years. So I think it's good that we decided to do this in pieces. That kind of gives you a sense of the work this committee will have over the next few years. I had a table once upon a time, I think when we first presented to you a few years ago, about all the things that we'd be bringing to you. And we're about halfway through that list. So we've done the Banks Amendment, two Banks Amendment bills, we've done a Financial Markets Act, we've done a Credit and Services Act, and now we're going forward for the Insurance Act. So we've got quite a legislative program over a few years, but we also don't want to overwhelm the industry or the committee, so we won't sort of, it'll take us a few years. So. And that's all I have to say. Yes.
All the members, there you've got it. Esther also prepared a written document, and I requested Fundy to include this, because Esther also went further to look at questions and not to probe. This is also from the National Treasury Impact Study.
Yes.
That has also been given to the members only. That's for this one. that has also been included, that we have as much info as possible to support us in our reading and when we engage with our counterparts. Honourable members, are there any questions for clarity you want to ask? This is the moment. Rob's not going with us, unfortunately, but I will as well. I noted Honourable Zabak, or Esha, sorry, and Honourable Mother Shipping, go down the line. You may start.
Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Shea. Pardon my little knowledge that does not really pay much attention to this Twin Peaks thing. One appreciates that when you regulate, there should be an objective and a purpose for regulating. And it would be from position A, which is the worst, or the better, to the best. And one intention of this government is to improve the lives of people and to make government accessible and its services accessible and acceptable to citizens. Where are you going to your slide 7? And I look at the services that I'm receiving as an ordinary citizen now. These services I've been getting in the financial institutions. There's nothing different than the same here that I'm not receiving in financial institutions. And what is this very intended to change? Well, there are of course other things I must say. Your ombudsman, like you explained, how they intend to be regulated and have only one access point rather than going to quite a number of them and all that. I understand those things. But with regard to its key business and the intent and purpose, I don't see anything different. I see the existing, unless you tell me. Thank you. Yes.
Excuse me, sir, person, forgive me, I choked a little when Honourable Motor Shipping, my colleague, says he doesn't see anything different. I think, you know, if you study and read the documents in advance, you probably will be guided. I think it's a lot different coming out of it. Yeah, well, I haven't read the whole bundle, I must admit. But, I can understand, you know, that we're moving towards, you know, regulating on an, I would say, I might use the term, on a more international, global level. And that's my consensus of the level that I have been able to read and grasp. Nevertheless, I just want to get down to the nitty-gritty. I can understand the dynamics, and when I look back at the last 4 or 5 years, when we had the new National Credit Act come in and the various other regulations that came in, I can see that we're busy tightening the bolts and trying to, put our ducks in a row here, so that we can compete on a global level because of the fact that we're having to deal on a global scale financially with corporates that are investing, etc. But be that as it may, I'd just like to get some guidance on your slide. I think it's slide 6, if I might put you that way. It must be slide 6. Please, if you don't mind, you got up there, great, yeah. If you look at the graph, the columns number 1, where you say poor interagency coordination and regulatory structure. Now, if one reads it to be just for what it is, I'd just like you to expand and just give it to me in simple English so that I can grasp the crux of what you're saying there. And same for point number 2, inadequate derivatives reforms. So just maybe just quickly, without wasting much time, because I think time is not on our side, if we just go to person quickly to slide number 10. What is the Twin Peaks system? Now, your second bullet on the left there, where you say promote and enhance the safety and soundness of market infrastructures. My question is, what are we currently doing wrong? I just want to grasp and understand, what are we currently doing wrong that we need to seriously promote and understand what are the dynamics moving forward, how, the mechanisms? And then lastly, Chairperson, with your permission, on that same slide, number 10, on the right-hand side, last bullet, assist in maintaining financial stability. Now, my understanding of Mark is that maintaining financial stability, sure, is all good and well. I mean, that should be the task of every nation, I think, in terms of its regulatory both. But to what extent? I mean, surely these are controlled via market forces. I mean, you saw the 2008 crisis. To what extent does one control that financial stability? Chairperson, I'm going to stop this for now, perhaps give some of the other colleagues a chance. Thanks, Chairperson.
I want to look back to the meeting of the G20 countries, where South Africa also participated, and agreements were signed, as well as the Organization for Economic Coordination and Development, where South Africa is also participating. I refer members back to the Basel agreements that were also signed. So this is everything to come in line with the international and global world, referring to the two regulations, to give that broader picture. Although, Taylor, would you hand up? No. Anyone else? Honorable Mohai? Yeah, he's sitting there behind the pillar.
Well, this is a very interesting, I think, legislation, but I want to just to benefit more. In terms of our comparative study, we're going visiting another country. South Africa is currently has got a problem of huge inequality and a strong financial sector. And majority of people, when you refer to customers, ordinary people, are at the receiving end in most instances. It still comes some regulatory framework that drives almost a compromise of ordinary people. I'm just trying to understand in the long run what exactly are we heading to with this legislation. I just want to understand that even where we are, where we are as a country, comparing with a highly advanced economy like UK, what we pick, problems are not the same, I want to believe. Problems are not the same, what we are trying to address. So I simply just want to understand. I'm not very clued up on this terrain. I know that there's been strong argument by Arafat has that as well, that we need to guard against financialization of South Africa's economy. And to what extent did it help us to achieve that? Thanks.
Anyone else? Honorable Taylor?
No, I confirmed my colleague for the first time in my life. I would like to read into the bills because South Africa got about 3/4 of your population are the poorest people. That's the truth of the nature. Now, what I'm grasping with is, how is this going to assist them?
Give them access to finance.
That's very important, citizen. That's where the most of the citizens don't even have that financial knowledge of, so how is this going to assist them? That is the question that I'm grasping with at the moment, but I would like to read more into the bill. Maybe I'll come up with answers. That's where my problem. I know when I go into banks, there's a bank ombudsman, there's this and that and blah, blah, blah. No, but I also agree with you that you should have one ombudsman, then they have all a different, if you, you know, as you explained, it was always, but how do we educate those people, Dali? How are we able to pursue us? I want to read more to that, so then I can maybe understand why. Thank you.
But Roy got the point, or Walter Blanche?
Chief Mission, mine is just the thought. You know, obviously I think all of us will agree that regulation is necessary. But, you know, just to add to what my colleagues already alluded to, I'm just thinking one must obviously guard the, you know, against over-regulation. I can remember when this Credit Act was introduced, being in business, it harmed the economy at the time. It was very, very bad, especially being in business, you know. That was just, you know, what we felt on our side, business people, that, you know, legislation was necessary to regulate, you know, the transactions between a business person and obviously his clients. The state is now also involved there. I'm just making an example. I'm not against it. Please don't get me wrong. I'm just making an example. Fact of the matter was I am concerned about over-regulation, and you know, it's you know, and obviously then against the possibility of enhancing a cumbersome process of doing business in this country. You know, my take on that would be that one need to make it easier for people to make business, start businesses. We need to, you know, we need to sort of motivate people for making business, make it easier for them. But you know, there's such a lot of things that people need to comply with nowadays that it's very, very difficult to make business, you know, and keep your things afloat. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Tabasa, that's a very important input you're making. In the discussions, the meetings between the President and the business community, this was addressed, it was put on the table by the private sector. And then there was a committee established, a working committee, that the work just carried on. So this is on the agenda. Yes, it was a complaint by private sector. So we will have to address it. Any other questions? Fine, Roy, you can reply. Before I forget, we've got visitors here from the Banking Association sitting there in the last row. Just stand up, let me see you. Thank you, welcome. Roy.
Thank you, Jay. I think the very good question about what is the bill actually changing and what will be different. And I think that sort of leads to a lot of the frustrations that, you know, we as government have had, and I think all the South Africans have had, is that our system has really been focused on keeping financial firms safe and making sure they don't fail. But we haven't, so we've been worrying a lot about this prudential authority, so how we keep banks basically alive. But we as government have not done enough, I think, so far about worrying about how financial services businesses interact with their customers. So do they treat their customers fairly? Do they provide sufficient documentation when they try and sell stuff to customers? One of the objectives of the authority will now be financial education programs. We have previously actually had a requirement in law for our regulators to go out and educate financial customers and to promote financial literacy. We've had some wording in the Financial Services Board Act, but we haven't really had very strong wording saying that it is actually one of your mandates to go out there and educate customers. So that is going to be the big change. One of the things I wanted for a long time, that is my personal view, is when you put your card into an ATM machine, it will tell you how much how much you're going to be charged when you make a transaction. That's what they do in Australia, and actually they do it in China, and many countries have it. We don't have the ability to ask banks to make sure that when you put your card into the card machine, that it just tells you how much it's going to charge you.
if we can put the man on the moon, why can't we do this?
It's not the banking system. So in Australia, what they did is they had this requirement that when you put your card in the machine, it tells you how much it's going to charge you. And they found that people stopped using other ATMs, they started using their own bank's ATMs, because they actually knew. You all know that when you put your card into the wrong ATM, it charges you like $15 or something. But if you put it in your own ATM, it's going to be free, depending on what factory you're going to go. So people don't actually know how much they're going to be charged, so in any case. So that's what we hope will change. In terms of more international, global level, I completely agree with you. The idea is, I think the question was about 5-6. Yeah, poor inter-agency coordination was the one question. So what we have at the moment is we have a banking regulator and what we call a non-banking regulator. So we have the Banking Supervision Department of the Reserve Bank, that's the regulator for banks, and we have a regulator called the non-banking financial regulator called the Financial Services Board. But most financial services companies are banks and non-banks at the same time. So they, for example, are banks and insurers, or banks and something else. So they automatically get regulated by two regulators, and the systems that two regulators have in the past were quite different. So you would be regulated in one way for the business you do as a bank, and in another way for your non-banking business. When a bank tries to sell your product, so when they have an advisor that tries to sell your product, then they're regulated by the Financial Advisory and Exchange Services Act, by the Financial Services Board. When they give you credit, then they're regulated by the National Credit Regulator. So, and when they give insurance, they're regulated by the Insurance Regulator. So a bank can be regulated by, I don't know, the Banking Association has done a study, they've counted 93 different laws. I don't know if it's that large. But the point is that it actually adds to the complexity of regulation and to the cost of regulation, and it just doesn't work. So I guess that's kind of the idea that we are trying to fix. Then on the question about OTC derivative reforms, in the global financial crisis, we all know what happened is that these banks sort of created these derivatives, which no one really understood, and they sold them to lots of different people, and then the whole system collapsed. And one of the concerns internationally is to set in place a proper system for regulating derivatives and to make sure that we regulate derivatives in a way that's consistent with the rest of the world. And we are putting in place a whole system to regulate derivatives so that it is consistent with what the G20 requirements are. So this was a finding in the peer review in 2013, and we're going to have another peer review in 2018, 5 years later, and by then we will have that is in charge of it, so if you can commit to it here, we will have it in place actually probably by the end of the year. End of this year. Okay, then the question of slide 10 about market infrastructures. So market infrastructure, the main market infrastructure that is the most, I guess, the most important one is the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. It is the sort of infrastructure for people to buy and sell shares. What happens if the Joburg Stock Exchange collapses? If, it, for example, there's an error in the trading system and the exchange can't work anymore. That would be quite a big impact on South Africa's financial system. So they have a whole set of procedures in place. They have some disaster recovery sites, and they have backup machines, and they have a whole system for that. But we are probably going to have another exchange maybe within a year or 2 years. We will have exchanges operating more and more overseas. So we just need to have a system of checking that they have the right systems in place to ensure that they are safe and sound and they're doing the right thing. I think that hopefully that answers the question. Yeah. Okay. Slide.
Let's think through the presentation. The personal comments we can reserve for. for outside the meeting. He said, no. I know what you want to say, but
assisting in financial stability, as you know, I think it is a requirement that all of our regulators worry about financial stability and the actions that they take. We, in that report on the economic impact, we show that if a banking system collapse, can cost the country an enormous amount of money. So we had to put in place a guarantee of 7 billion rand for African Bank. That is a small change compared to what the rest of the world spent on saving the banks. So one of the responsibilities of the Financial Sector Conduct Authority is to assist in maintaining financial stability. So the Reserve Bank has the responsibility. So both authorities have to assist the Reserve Bank, is basically what we're saying. And so I think you made important points about how we signed up to a number of international agreements, and that's because our banks operate around the world, so they operate everywhere. For banks to be able to operate, they need to comply with international regulations, they need to comply with Basel requirements so that they can offer services to international investors. They have to comply with FIC requirements and tax requirements and money laundering, so there's quite a lot of stuff that they have to comply with. And the point is made that, you know, our problems are not the same as in the United Kingdom and the problem of financialization. That is definitely a potential problem, I think, in South Africa, that we could see the financial services sector kind of taking over, which is, I think, what happens when financialization takes place. And that brings a lot of risks. So one of the problems with financialization is that it makes the financial services sector more likely to collapse. And when it collapses, it can have very big financial implications. Financialization can also make financial services more expensive, and it can actually sort of crowd out manufacturing and sort of real economy stuff. I think the way of dealing with that is to ensure that you have a strong regulatory system. So you have a system that is very closely worries about the risks that the financial services sector can pose to the economy. You need to ensure that you have strong regulators that have got the right mandates and can guard against the risks that this huge financial services sector, or a growing financial services sector, can pose to the economy. And, you know, if you look at economic theory, if you have four big players, so if you have four big banks, the outcome is always that they charge you more than they should and provide their services. So we really need to do a lot to deal with the outcomes of having big banks. And one of those is to have more competition in banking. So we have a program of work to strengthen competition in banking. As you know, the Postbank, for example, has now got an interim license, and so that will be a possible competitor. But in addition, we need to ensure that the customers are treated fairly by their financial institutions. We have systems in place to educate consumers about what banks can do and the risks that they could pose. And we also need, I think, finally, to strengthen our regulations and strengthen our legal process as much as possible. Then the final question about guarding against overregulation. Yes, that is true, but also we need to, I guess, need to balance the risks that the financial sector could pose against the potential costs. And at the moment, we have lots of different requirements, and what we're trying to do is simplify the system as much as possible. I think that's kind of the solution, I think, Chair.
Are there any follow-ups? I refer honourable members, this will be in your information packs as well. I requested Fundi to add it. The key issues that we are going to explore. How can Parliament be more effectively ensure that regulators are held accountable? What is the Mexican experience? What can we learn from them? What is the role of Parliament, the executive and the regulators in setting law, regulations and rules for the financial system? So it goes on. What is the appropriate balance between different policy objectives? For example, United Kingdom has a scheme to help homelessness. Coming to Uncle Gaylor's point, some have argued that this has led to a house price bubble, creating massive potential risks. How does one protect the fiscus from bank failures? How can the financial sector help achieve other policy objectives? In Mexico, for example, there is strong developmental focus. How is this implemented? What lessons are there for other developing countries? And so it goes on. So that will give you the appetite on the members. Roy, thank you. And the lady that accompanied you, Mr. Plaidy, thank you for your presence representing the ministry. All the members, you have to please avail yourself tomorrow. Fundi, when will you be ready to give us the info packs with what you have?
With what I have tomorrow morning, but if I am going for national presentation, I'm not sure, it might be Friday.
Friday is late, because members, some of them leaving tomorrow evening, there's a joint setting, etc. So I think what you have ready tomorrow morning, there's caucuses, and then there's a joint setting at 2 o'clock. So that we have that, say, before 2 o'clock, if that's okay with my honorable members. In that info pack will also be your itinerary, your travel arrangements, etc. We will try to include that as most of the information that we need, that you want to know, as well as contact numbers in Mexico, the numbers which you have to give to your relatives at home. That's very crucial. I recognize Honorable Gaida.
Can we receive some of us can receive those tests at the airport? Because some of us, our flights leave earlier.
Tomorrow?
Yeah, or electronically.
You want to have the, well, you're going to get it electronically in any case. You're going to get it electronically in any case, but we would like to give you your file. But if you want to have it, get it at the airport at our Rumble, then it will be done in that way as well. It's just a lot of package, one person to carry with from Cape Town to our Rumble, but let it be. So we're going to see how we can assist the members the best possible. That before you leave Cape Town, you've got information in your hand. I believe in that. Thank you, Fundi. Thank you, Stel. Thank you, Esther, and the other staff that assisted in arranging our meeting. We are now moving on. The 10 o'clock meeting is in S12A, where we will be dealing with all the tax bills. Why are we doing this? I took you back to our SAT meeting we had at the Towers Hotel, where we said, we want to do, when it comes to legislation, our meetings joined to the Standing Committee. Why? To get exposed to the information earlier. Before it's eventually reversed, we don't know when, in the year, to get acquainted with the content. That is the reason that we don't rush it. And I think we can do it differently and we can do it better. And that is why we're going to this 10 o'clock meeting. And that will be our approach. Although he's going to refer to us later, we have all the background. And you can have done some more reading as well. That's the point. All the members, that brings us to the end of the business of the meeting, and the meeting is adjourned.